So we're in a, this is a, this book, I think, I told people I was sitting in a, having lunch with some friends about a couple of years ago, and they're all book readers, they all like to read books, and they were, each person was saying, oh, this is my favorite book, you know, this is the best book I ever read in my life. So for me, it's this one, okay? And you know, we have these projects to save books. We, like in Russia, we cataloged 130,000 books. It took 14 years with our team in St. Petersburg. And there are about 200,000 great books in Tibet, like on the level of the Bible or Dante or Shakespeare. And there's 200,000 of them. But this is my favorite. Okay, this is, I think, the most helpful book in the world, maybe. So it's a complete guide to enlightenment from the beginning to the end. Everything you need is in here, okay? And very practical, good for people in the modern world, you know. So I'd like you to, I was taught it three times over a 30-year period, and I'd like to pass it on, okay? So nowadays we're traveling a lot. We are doing a lot of success seminars, which is a sneaky way to teach Buddhism in other countries. And so we just got back from Kiev and Tel Aviv and Bulgaria and Paris and Montpellier on the Riviera, which was a tough assignment. And it's working. Like in over a thousand people came to Montpellier, and in Bulgaria we did the pen on morning TV. A million people watched it. So we have that. We should put that on the website. I think I have the. I got the video. It's cute. Then in Israel, 700 people came every night, and. There are 35 ACI groups in Israel now. So we travel and we do that kind of thing. On Friday, we go straight from here to the airport to Singapore and Malaysia and Beijing and to some southern cities, Shenzhen and Guangzhou. So it's really spreading, and people all over the world are using it. But I don't get to go deep in those programs, you know. Usually they're 5-day programs or things like that. So I don't get to pass on the things that I learned, the deeper things that I learned. And I, here in Arizona, and next winter in Guadalajara, we are going through this book, okay? By the way, these are two versions of the book. I thought I would pass them around, okay? This one is Tibetan. This is a Tibetan, old Tibetan cloth, hand-printed, you know, dots on it. And the paper was made by hand in Tibet from a special bush and then printed on a wood block. And Ken Rinpoche gave me this book when I became a Geshe. He gave me his copy. And it has his notes in it. So I lost it. I had 50 boxes of books that were shipped from New York, and then I found it last week. So I thought I'd pass it around and you could see the difference. This one is printed in India. On cheap paper, you know, and this is Tibetan paper, and this will last for 500, 600, 700 years, and so I thought you'd like to see it, so I'll pass it around. The old one you don't have to see, right? But I need someone to take it back to New Jersey. Maybe I'll ask later. Anybody's in New York area wants to take this? Do you want to take it back to Jhumpa? Okay, that's your problem. Don't lose it. So I borrowed that one. But you can pass it around and see it. Mm-mm. So, and I'm not going to rush this text. I planned to take 10 years, but I think it's going to be like 12 or 14 years to finish it. And you don't have to get stressed, okay? You don't have to. I mean, come as much as you can, but don't go crazy. And I would like to pass it on carefully in the old way. And a lot of times he will mention something that Tibetan monks would know. His audience was Tibetan monks and nuns. But I will... These are actually lectures that were given over a 20-day period in Tibet around in the 1920s. And it was carved. It was an immediate hit. And then it was carved. And there was a young monk there who decided he would record everything because there were no tape recorders. So he took notes. He took notes of the Tibetan, like perfectly. And then he spent, I think, about 20 years creating this book of his teacher's teachings. And then that was Trichai Rinpoche, Gyatri Trichai Rinpoche, who became the Dalai Lama's teacher and my teacher's teacher. So the Dalai Lama had two main teachers, this Dalai Lama. And one of them was the young monk who edited this book, and he spent 20 years on the transcript. And it's probably the best example of Tibetan literature in the last few centuries. It's exquisitely done, and the Tibetan is perfect, which is unusual because Tibetans don't spell very well and stuff like that. So it's just it's a classic. And a lot of my life has been, I read it now again after 30 years or 40 years, and I realize a lot of who I am came from that, you know. So I find things that I have been thinking nowadays, and then I realize it was planted 30 years ago or 40 years ago. So it's a beautiful, beautiful experience to go through that book and learn it. I think it's what... In my mind, it's one of the greatest spiritual books in the world. And if you can learn it and then pass it on, okay? So we will have homeworks. And it gives you a structure of what I think is important in the book. And then it gives you the answers also. So I'd like to ask you, we had evaluation sheets from last retreat, and we actually read them. And so there were a lot, it was hundreds of pages, and I read them all, almost all of them. And then a lot of people said they wanted homework, that they missed the homework last time, because it gives you a chance to understand what I think is important or what you should remember. So we'll have homeworks. I have three ready. I need to do maybe two more. And I ask you to do them, okay? It makes your knowledge strong. And then you can teach other people, okay? And the homeworks give you a structure when you teach other people. The whole book has been translated in three volumes by a fellow student of mine who studied with Ken Rinpoche for many years, Art Engel, who's... he was my, what do you call, rival? I was jealous of him. I don't know if he was jealous of me, but for like 25 years. But his Tibetan is unbelievable. And when he got mad, he used to channel Tibetan, and he would curse in Tibetan. And then I'd ask Rinpoche, what's he saying, you know? And he said, I don't know how he knows those words, you know? And he's some kind of amazing person. So, and he spent, I think, 20 years translating it after Rinpoche taught it. So there's an English translation that you can read. A lot of times the Pabonk Rinpoche who wrote the text. So the Pabonk Rinpoche is the grandfather lama of the current Dalai Lama, right? So, and he's our great-grandfather lama. He also taught my teacher. When my teacher was quite young. So there's a story about that. But you can... sometimes he'll mention something that Tibetans might know about. And then I like to go to other scriptures and bring you those points, okay? So this is going to take longer than just teaching that book. It'll probably take twice as long because I enjoy going, and if he mentions something difficult, I like to go find it somewhere. And we have, I don't know, a million pages of text put in, input by the refugees. Our computer project is 25 years old this year. So I can go look in, you know, in a few seconds I can look through thousands of scriptures and take some beautiful explanation of something for you. Okay? So I will do a lot of, what do you call those? Detours? Digressions. Endless digressions, okay? And so that we may not get to the homework sometime. Huh?
Footnotes.
Yeah, footnotes. Just cool things I think that you should know, okay? And so we'll be doing that. And then we'll be doing a lot of meditation, okay? If you start to feel warm, I think later in the day, we have air conditioners that we can put in the windows. They're noisy and inconvenient, but they're cool. So we'll have a vote, you know, later in the day when it starts to get hot. Your bodies produce a lot of heat, and so we'll see. I think this morning it's okay, but in the afternoon you may be attacked by the sleepy disease, and which drives me crazy. So I may blast cold air on you. Keep hydrated, okay? Your welcome bag has a, I think, right? One of the comments on the evaluation forums was that people felt bad about all the plastic bottles and the waste of plastic. So we put metal bottles in your welcome bag, and you should be drinking all the time here. If you're not from Arizona, even if you are, you should just be drinking all the time. And we'll give you pee-pee breaks, so don't worry. Halfway through each session, we'll do a pee-pee break, okay? So, but just keep drinking, because you're not used to the dryness here. And you will feel, it'll make you tired and give you headaches and things. So I'm going to review just a little bit from the fourth class. We're supposed to finish 10 classes by the end of the week, but I don't think so. We'll just pick it up next time. We've been going through the six traditional steps of preparing for meditation. First one is?
Cleaning the room.
Yeah, cleaning your room, okay. I was going to ask how many people actually were cleaning their rooms, but maybe not. but it makes you... I've actually been doing it, which is unusual. And it's this big struggle. The minute you get up, you make the bed instead of leaving it for later. And then you clean up your clothes all over the floor. And then sometimes I sweep the room. And... like that, okay? It's a spiritual practice. It makes your mind clear, clean, orderly, peaceful, okay? And slowly try to throw the junk out of your house. I'm pretty good at that now. I've been working on it. I'm mostly moving it down to the storeroom. And But try, okay? Just throw things out. Get them out of your house. You don't need all the stuff that you have. And it distracts you. And it makes you remember the things you have. Like shoes. Like old shoes, you know? Like, you have 20 pairs of shoes or 10 pairs of shoes. You don't use 4 or 5 of them, ever. So throw them out. And then you don't have to have the inventory in your mind. You don't have to be remembering. Your mind is like a hard disk drive, right? And as you get older, it fills up. Because you have memories of your first boyfriend and your second one and your third one. And then those are still there. And so as you get older, it gets more and more crowded. So it's better to dump things if you can. Jettison possessions as much as you can, and then you have less things on your mind and your mind will be more clear. Okay, so cleaning your room is a high practice. And he went off on this long thing, right, about, Chudapandika, this guy who became an arhat because he was cleaning his room well, okay? All right, so try it. Second one was what?
Setting up
an altar and probably making some offerings. Okay, so putting an altar in your house is a statement, you know, that I have a spiritual side to my life, okay? You have your computer area, you know, you have your eating area, you have your pooping area, you have your laundry area, right? Then you should have your spiritual area of your house. And then that's just a statement, you know. And the altar can be very personal. It doesn't have to be, you know, you have images on the altar that mean something to you. There's no, we're not excluding people who don't have a Geshe Michael picture on their altar or like that. You put pictures that mean something to you and that your own private personal teachers. And it could be Jesus, it could be Moses, it could be Muhammad, doesn't matter, okay? But have a place in your house which is dedicated to the higher things. Because in the end, that's the only thing that counts, okay? You will visit the kitchen the last time. You will visit the baño the last time, right? You will sleep in your bed the last time. And then only the altar matters at that time, okay? And so only the spiritual part of your house matters at the end. So make it nice and don't ignore it. The rest of this stuff is very, demanding. Life is demanding. The baño is demanding. The kitchen is demanding. The bed is demanding. And you think, oh, I'll leave the altar for tomorrow. I don't have to meditate tonight, you know. But in the end, that's the only part of your house that matters. So don't ignore it, you know. In the end, you need it. So prepare now. Get it ready now. Okay. Third thing? Yeah, you could say offering. It's actually a second. Yeah. Like setting up the altar and offering is a second. Okay. Third one is? Yeah, just how to sit properly. And we went through that. How to meditate properly. These are the things you have to do before you do a meditation, right? You have to learn to sit properly. Okay. The fourth step will be how to visualize the refuge, okay? Refuge. Refuge means who can protect you, okay? And there's a famous story. Uh-oh. This is the Lama phone, okay? Only the Lama is supposed to use this, except Jigme cheats sometimes. There's a story that, Lord Buddha was called Shakyamuni. Shakya was his... It's not the same as Sakya, okay? Sakya is a Tibetan sect. Shakya is a people that lived in India a long time ago. Shakyamuni means like leader of the Shakyas. So he was the village headman of the Shakya clan. And then one day they were attacked by soldiers from another part of India. And they killed a lot of the people in the village. And then a couple of people ran. They said, oh, Buddha lives here. You know, we have Buddha in our village. He will protect us. And they ran to the Buddha's room, to his cottage. And then that shawl, that monk shawl, they hid under the monk shawl, right? A couple of them hid under the monk shawl. And then the soldiers came in and they killed them. Hanging onto the Buddha's legs and arms, you know, they were killed. So then the question in Buddhism is, who can protect you? You know, if you live in the time of the Buddha and soldiers attacked your village and you can hold on to the Buddha and he can't protect you, then what's your protection? Who's going to help you when things are bad? And then we say the three jewels, okay? Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, okay? But it has a special meaning. The jewel of the Buddha, is not the same as the Buddha. The jewel of the Dharma is not the same as the Dharma. The jewel of the Sangha is not the same as the Sangha. Okay, so who do you go to for protection? Then I always say, you know, your boss yells at you. I was in New York. I was 20 years in corporate life in New York. The other day I drove to Phoenix from my house. It takes 2 hours. And then I drove back. And then I realized I did that every day for 20 years. I did two hours each way for 20 years, you know, and to help the monastery, right? So anyway, it's like I've been in many, many thousands of corporate situations where the owner of the company or the board or somebody's screaming at you, right? That's your job. In a big corporation, just people are screaming at you. They want this or they want that, right? So then they criticize you. I went out to lunch with one of them in Israel, one of the owners of the company. It was cute. We're still friends, like 30 years later. But they were screaming at me, and I remember she used to scream at me. She apologizes every time I meet her now. I screamed at you a lot, didn't I? And I was like, yeah, you did. But she was... So someone's hurting you. Someone's screaming at you at work. They're saying, why didn't you finish this order? Why didn't you get this order done? You know? And why do you have so many employees working for you? Like, it's a contradiction, right? Like, why didn't you get the work done? I don't have any workers. How come you're spending so much money on workers so I can get the work done? You know, and it's like that. It's always like that. So anyway, in this system, we call diamond cutter system mainly. In this system, when somebody criticizes you or yells at you, then you're supposed to think, your reaction is supposed to be, why is this happening to me? Okay, like, what's the real reason why this is happening to me? It cannot be that I'm a bad employee because I'm perfect. So it must be something else, you see? It must be that I yelled at someone maybe last week, okay? I was hard on one of my workers. I was unfair to one of my workers, and now the boss is yelling at me, okay? So then what's the stupidest thing you can do? Yell back. Human nature is to yell back, and that's why you're human. That's why you were born in this place, okay? Because you yell back. So it's a cycle. Because you're human, you yell back. And because you yell back, you have to be human again and live in a world like this, okay? Where people yell, okay? It's a cycle. Then supposedly this training, the whole point of all these 10 years or 14 years of this book, right? The whole point is that can you not yell back? Can wisdom overcome nature? You see, can wisdom overcome human nature? Can you, like an animal, like a dog, you know, can you learn not to yell back? In your lifetime, in your 50, 60, 70 years here, can you learn one thing? Don't yell back. Okay? Because then they will yell again. Okay? Can you just learn this one thing? You know, if you go to enough classes, you know, hundreds of classes, can you learn not to yell back? You know? No, it's like that, right? So, and that's protection. And that's the only protection which is offered in this religion, in Buddhism, okay? We don't believe that if you have a photo of Buddha on your altar, they're not going to blow up the World Trade Center or something like that. It's not going to happen. Or that if you have a Dalai Lama picture, you won't get cancer. We don't believe that. We don't think they can protect you, okay? What can protect you is understanding where stuff comes from and stop reacting. Stop creating more bad seeds, okay? And that's the only thing. It's your understanding which protects you. And there's no picture or statue or people in red suits that can't protect you, okay? So in the practice of preparing for meditation, you clean your room to make your mind orderly. You set up an altar and you make offerings to make a statement this is part of my life. And part of my apartment or part of my house is dedicated to my spiritual life. In the way that I have parts that are dedicated to eating and dedicated to Facebook. You know, I have a desk, I have a laptop. No, nowadays our religion is mostly computer. And all of us have a nice, the computer space is nice. The altar is suffering, right? Okay, so, you know, that's the second step. Third step, learn how to sit properly, you know, posture-wise. Learn how to sit properly. A lot of sitting has to do with yoga, okay? Asana, the word asana, a means very much. And then as means to sit, and I think as comes from that. Okay, I think so. So anyway, asana used to be sitting postures. The purpose of yoga, the reason to do yoga, is to make your, traditionally, is to make your body strong enough to sit for a long time. Makes your back strong and you're able to sit for a long time. You're flexible enough to sit for a long time. So asana, the first asanas were all sitting postures. So you do yoga and you learn to sit, okay? Learn to sit quietly. That's the third. Now we're on the fourth preliminary for meditation, which is going for shelter, going for protection, going for refuge, okay? And to do that, we do a visualization of the Buddha, okay? It could be your teacher. Traditionally, at this point, when you're preparing for meditation, you briefly visualize Lord Buddha, okay? And you're supposed to think that on the outside, this is the Buddha. On the inside, it's my personal teacher, my own heart teacher, okay? So the essence of that person that you're visualizing is your own teacher as protection, okay? As protection. How? Protection. Can you, you know, text them when you're in trouble? It's not like that, you see. When you visualize, at this point, we're going to be picturing the Buddha. And we're going to think that that's my Lama. That's my own personal teacher. And then you're going to think, this person can protect me by teaching me. Okay? Not by, like, having a bigger gun than the guy who's... You know what I mean? That's how we think, right? He's going to teach me how not to be violent when people are violent to me. And then that's going to save me. And that's going to protect me. And then violence will end in my world. Ahimsa pratishtayam tat sannidha varityagam, right? Yoga Sutra. If you make non-violence a way of life, you violence will not be done to you. Okay? They teach you that. So at this point, when you're preparing for meditation, you bring to mind a mental picture of the person who protects you by teaching you not to respond with violence. Okay, like that. All right. So I will cover the homework questions as we go. Okay, this homework you're going to get today, I think. But anyway, the first question, it has to do with who are they on the outside and who are they on the inside? Okay. If you feel more comfortable with a woman, Buddha, you can visualize Tara. I brought a Tara, I think. Yeah. I gave Rinpoche, I wanted to know everything about diamonds, so I paid some guy $8,000 to teach me at night, way into the night, every night, how to cut diamonds. Like, we were just dealing in diamonds, but I learned how to cut them. So I sat with these in the factories at midnight with these guys, and I gave Rinpoche all the diamonds that I cut. And then when I went into Sriya retreat, he sent me that Tara. And he put all the diamonds on Tara. So they're all on the crown, and they're not cut very well, but they're okay. So anyway, if you feel more comfortable with Tara or something like that, you go ahead and, you know, whatever image you want to use, it doesn't matter. I think a lot of people feel more comfortable with Tara. There's a great power to the traditional form of the Buddha. I'll put one up on the projector when we get it in the afternoon, okay? But there's a great power to visualizing the Buddha that was here 2,500 years ago. So sometimes do that, okay? There's a power to that which you which you don't know. It's a great power, okay? In the book, Pabongkwa Rinpoche explains, he goes off a lot on the mudras. Mudra means the hand gestures, right? So we do these hand gestures. In traditional, there are hand gestures, that mudras, that you do. So he goes off on the hand gestures that Lord Buddha has. And there are mainly two. One is that Lord Buddha is pressing the ground with his right hand. So you'll see traditional image of Lord Buddha, he's pressing the ground with his right hand like that. And then his left hand is palm up, and there's a wisdom bowl. Some people call it a monk's begging bowl, and my teacher violently didn't like that. Of course, non-violently, violently didn't like that. But he said, it's not a begging bowl, it's a wisdom bowl. Okay, you can use it for begging, but it's a wisdom bowl. And so he's holding a wisdom bowl in his left hand. There are symbolism to those two mudras. Those two hand gestures have a meaning. And they relate to what we call the four demons. Okay, so there are four demons in your life, okay, and you have to, in your time on this earth, you have to try to overcome four demons, okay. Those two gestures represent that the Buddha has overcome them already, okay. So how? I'm going to read you the text. Chaye sanungi lai pu tu chomba dang. So the right hand on the earth, pressing on the earth, represents that Lord Buddha has overcome the demon. There's a demon called the son of the deity, or the son of the worldly deity. Then I freaked out. I was going to seminary before I went to meet the Tibetans. And I thought, oh, they're talking about the son of God. You know, this is very bad. It's nothing to do with that, okay? It's just the words in Tibetan are Devaputra, which means Phaipu, which means his name, the demon's name. His dad was an evil spirit who was called Deva, which means like worldly god or something like that. Deity. What do you call those Greek and Roman guys? Jupiter and who's the guy? Thor. You know, just think Thor, son of Thor, or something like that. Or, I don't know, something like that. Okay, not a big. It doesn't refer to Jesus, okay? Anyway, his name is Son of the Worldly God. That represents negative emotions, and mainly that would distract you. He gives the example of jealousy, okay? So you can think of that demon supposedly is related to jealousy. It's hard to find an explanation of that demon, but that demon is related to jealousy. And especially that demon doesn't like it when you get spiritual. He's jealous of your time. He would rather have you on the internet safely surfing on the internet, or, you know, doing things which are not going to enlighten you. Then when you do something spiritual, he gets jealous and he tries to cause some kind of a problem. Okay, and big problems come. Okay. The bigger the problems that come, you should be, what do you call it? Complimented. It means you're doing some heavy practice, okay? We were in Guadalajara, 1,000 people came. I was like, you know, something bad's gonna happen, you know? No, it was like out of hand. It was like, they almost had a revolution that night. I'm like, oh, and something's gonna happen, you know? And then poop hits the fan, you know? So you... there are beings who don't like to see things growing and happy, and they will try to, they get jealous. So that's Devaputra, it's called that. So when you see Lord Buddha like that, he's like, no problem, you know? He's like, squish, squish. Okay, he's like that. Right? You see some mighty warrior, no, he's not responding, right? This means you can yell at me or you can criticize me, but I'm cool. Okay, like that. He's just, I'm not gonna shoot you back, so then you shoot me back, and I'm not going to start this. What do you call it? Salvo back and forth. I'm cool. Okay, like that. Okay, left hand. Sungsen nangi dutse deyong nawa mepa mengi dutse. In the bowl, there are three forms of nectar. Okay? In the bowl, there are three forms of nectar. In Sanskrit, what do they call nectar? Amrita. I don't know where they got this Amrita and Krishna and Sanskrit. It's Krishna and Sanskrit. Sanskrita. And it's Amrita. Okay? And everyone pronounces it wrong, even like yoga teachers from India. Okay? It's Amrita. Mur means the root for death, right? Like mortuary, murder. Means not. Means no death. Amrita means no death. The Greek nek means necrophilia,
death.
And tar is the same as Sanskrit, tara, to go beyond. So nektar, to go beyond death, is the same as amrita. So there are three forms of nektar in his bowl. Okay, what's the first one? And these are the three remaining demons, okay? First is the demon of, they call it Pumbudu. Pumbudu means the body with which you were born, okay? Which is doomed, all right? The body with which you were born is doomed. Unless you radically change your seeds in your mind, the body in which you were born will just degenerate and fall apart, right? As you get older. Okay, so the nectar in the bowl in his left hand represents, I don't have that problem anymore. I have turned my body into light. Okay, and yoga is, one of the main purposes of yoga is to affect that transformation of the physical body, flesh and blood, into light. Okay, so he has, that nectar is in the bowl. And so he has overcome the second demon, which is the body you were born in, okay? And the mind. Okay, chiwa mepe tse duzi, chidaki du. Inside that bowl is also nectar which stops death itself. And so he has overcome the third demon, which is death itself. So the second demon is the condition of this body. The first demon is like jealous interruptions of your spiritual practice by demons. The better you get, the more difficult situations will come. Okay? If you what do you call it? If you're cooperative and you just go on the web and or spend your days watching videos, you're not gonna get any spirits coming and bothering you. You know? We got him. He's all right. He'll just quietly die. You know? And he'll get old and die eating junk food, you know, watching videos, you know, we got that one. It's when you try to do something important spiritually that then you'll get big problems, okay, like that. Okay, so third is overcoming the demon of death. Sapa mepe yeshiki duzi nyomobe du jomba tsun. Then there's what we call the nectar of wisdom in that bowl, and that overcomes the demon, the fourth demon is called nyomo, which is what? Kleshas, mental afflictions, negative emotions, okay? Desire, jealousy, competitiveness, hatred, like that. So he, the fact that he's sitting like that and that you visualize him like that in step number four of the six preliminaries is that you're taking refuge in a being who has overcome death itself, who has no negative emotions, who no longer has a physical body which is going to die and get old, and who has overcome obstacles to their spiritual practice. You're taking refuge in a perfect being. This being is perfect, okay? And then, in this tradition, you're supposed to think, that's my teacher. My teacher is that, okay? And I'm not trying to be your teacher. Everyone should have a different teacher. Your teacher should be whoever you connect with. You know, go through life, find your heart teacher. That's your job. I'm just telling you how you should act towards them. In your mind, you should think, this person is the Buddha. You know, this person has come for me, out of all the people in the world, this person is here on this planet to take care of me and to get me enlightened, okay? And you should think that way. There's this, what do you call it? There's this current going on in our group nowadays of, oh, we should disagree with our teacher, or the teacher's wrong sometimes, or, you know, I saw a teacher pick their nose the other day, or something like that. I don't believe that at all. I think it's foolish. If you didn't find a teacher that you think is the Buddha, then you should find a teacher who you think is the Buddha. And you shouldn't have a part-time teacher who is half-time wrong and half-time correct or something like that, you know? No, really. You won't get anywhere. You won't get enlightened. You'll be reasonable, you know, but you won't be enlightened, okay? So if you haven't found that teacher, then find them. But when you find them, relate to them as if they were the Buddha, okay? And not in any other way, okay? And if you didn't find a person that you can relate to that way, try to find, okay? That's your job. In this system, how do you find them? You create them, okay? You know, you don't go to India. I can save you a lot of diarrhea. You know, don't go to India looking for somebody, you know. Create them. They'll come to you, okay? In the comfort of your own home, you know. How do you create a teacher? Share what you know with other people, right? Do your homeworks. Share the good things you've learned with other people, you know, whether it's yoga or meditation or things you've heard. Then share them in a happy don't go knocking on people's doors and saying, you have to accept this book, you know, and just like at work, say, look, you don't yell at the boss, he's just going to yell again next week, you know, like, then your teacher, then you became a lama. You're a lama in your office, right? You don't have to tell anybody. Just help people gracefully, kindly, and that karma will create a teacher. That karma will create your heart lama. But when they come, I say, and I repeat, don't think of them as a normal person. They are not, they don't need psychology, or you don't have to, you know, either take them or don't take them. But if you take them, don't think of them as a normal person, because a normal person can't get you out of this life. Okay? Take your time. Be careful. Choose wisely. But once you choose, don't think of them as a normal person. Okay? Because then you'll just get normal. Okay? All right. I believe that. And I do it myself. Okay? All right. I'm going to pick up on the text now from where we were. Okay. And we'll do some questions and answers in the afternoon, okay? Because that's the time when you're sleepy and it will keep you awake, okay? All right. So just for the record, we're on folio 81B, okay? And we'll have the Tibetan up here starting in the afternoon. You can follow the Roman letters, the English letters. Okay. Ona larin tembe lama mambo yuna, kang san deb nyamna, rangi la penche we lama de tsor che gu. So there's a discussion. Pabon Krimpache is saying, if you've had many lamas, which one should you be visualizing? Okay. And he says Lamrim lamas. So in Tibet, In our monastery, we take a vacation like twice a year, and then some big lama will come and teach Lamrim. We don't study Lamrim in the monastery. We study the roots of it, which are the five great schools of philosophy. And then the Lamrim came out of that. So twice a year we have visiting lamas. The Dalai Lama might come, or one of his teachers used to come and teach Lamrim. So if I have been taught Lamrim by many lamas, which one should I be visualizing? And then he says, Rangyula Penchewe Lama. It should be the one who changed your heart the most. Okay? It should be the one who had the greatest effect on your heart and your behavior. Okay? Like that. And that should be the Lama that you visualize. Maybe not the one who was most knowledgeable scripturally, or maybe not the most famous one, but who's the one who had the biggest effect on your life? Then that's the one you should be visualizing. Your heart lama, if you have a heart lama. If you don't have a heart lama, you should be creating one. Okay? By sharing things in a graceful, non-pushy way with people who need them. And that's how you create a teacher. And sharing your skills, for example, at work, or if you're a good sitar player or something, like, be generous with your skills and give them away freely. Which is a little scary in a work situation sometimes, right? I'll teach you how to do everything I do. You know? And the more you're able to overcome that resistance to teaching other people everything you know, the more you will create your heart lama. Okay? That's the karma, to create a heart lama. Okay? Even in a business situation or stuff like that. Okay? The penche tsor chingu. Ye kichi la jetsun jampa. So there are other lamas seated around your lama. This now gets a little complicated, and it's going to get very complicated. I personally don't do it very often. I restrict my visualization to just my teacher. I get overwhelmed if there are 48 lamas sitting there. But it's my job to tell you the tradition, okay? I suggest that you probably want to just start with your own teacher. But here's the tradition, okay? On the right, which in Tibetan scripture means on the lama's right, which is your left, as you face the lama. So always when you read a Tibetan scripture and they're describing a visualization, you should be warned that it's backwards. We say on the lama's left. They say on the lama's right because it's on that lama's right, his right, which is your left as you're facing him, okay? So her is a throne. And on that throne is Maitreya, okay? The next Buddha to come in this world, who is closer than you think sometimes. Chichung gita kordu gyachen chugyuki lama namki korwa. Then that lama, Maitreya, has all the lamas in this world who taught the bodhisattva teachings, the teachings on bodhicitta. Okay, they are surrounding Maitreya. Okay, so there, all the lamas in history, like Master Shantideva or Master Sangha, these great lamas who taught about bodhicitta. What is bodhicitta? Bodhicitta is the desire to save the world. Okay, it's the desire to save the world. And I like our business, right? Our, what do you call it? Our activities are global, and they are without border, I think. And I think you see it here. We have England, we have West Indies, we have Israel, we have Russia, we have a lot of Mexico, we have Chile, we have Vietnam. We have many, the borders are, I think our activities and our, what do you call it? The teaching is universal. Everyone has to die. Everyone has problems with their boss. You know, these teachings are truly without border. They are for everyone, and they fit everyone. So bodhicitta is the desire to see those useful things spread across the globe without regard to borders. Okay, and it's happening. And it really does happen. Okay, so these are the lamas on the teacher's right, are all the lamas who taught that kind of thing. And you are those lamas, right? You are those lamas. Like, we were looking for someone to come to Singapore. We were short one person in Singapore, so we called Alejandro in Guadalajara, you know? So Guadalajara is going to Singapore, okay? And that's the way it should be, you know? It should be like that. Bodhicitta is global, universal. Okay, not just this planet, but let's stick to this planet. Okay. Yungi chi chung la jetsun jambe yang. On the lama's left, meaning your right, as you face them, is another throne. And on that throne is Manjushri. Okay, and Manjushri is the teacher of wisdom, the wisdom tradition. So Manjushri is teaching the pen. And Maitreya is telling you how to use it to get a boyfriend. So that you can be an example for everyone else who wants a boyfriend, which is bodhicitta. Okay? It's that simple. Jampei Yang. Kongshin samotagyu ki laman nam ki korwa. And then, as I mentioned before, that Manjushri is surrounded by all the lamas in history who have mainly taught emptiness, like Arya Nagarjuna or Jetsun Kapa, or lamas who have taught the pen. Okay? Then there's another throne, smaller throne. There are three. So far we have three smaller thrones, right? On the lama's right is Maitreya. On the lama's left is. You can remember left because left is the woman's side, and wisdom is the woman's thing. So Manjushri is on the left, and then in the back is all the tantric teachers. Okay, the teachers of the secret lineages, which are Dorje Chang. In the middle is Vajradhara. So when Lord Buddha teaches secret teachings, he doesn't look like a monk. He looks more like a yogi. And he will have long hair and silk clothes and jewels and like that. Okay, so that will be behind your teacher is the Buddha as he came to teach the secret teachings. Then there's a lineage, say Gyachen Chögyu, Sabmo Tawegyu, and then Nyamlen Chinnakigyu. So these are three great streams of Buddhism that have come down through the last 2,500 years, and they are represented in this visualization. So there's Maitreya teaching love. I will get a boyfriend using this system so that everyone can learn how to do it. Okay? Manjushri, who's teaching emptiness. Okay? The only way to get a teacher is to create them. Don't go to looking around India. You could go to India, but first share the things you know. Then go to India, and you will find them. Okay? Like that. Or go to Gwalahar, doesn't matter. Then behind is a Nyamlen Jinglapkigyu. Nyamlen Jinglapkigyu means the lineage of the blessing of deep practice. And that refers to the secret teachings, the lamas of the secret teachings. So far we have three great lineages represented in the visualization. Chungla Rangitsawe, Dungi Chichungla Rangitsawe Lama Deni. Then in this visualization, you can also add your own personal heart teacher on a smaller throne in front. Isn't your heart teacher already there? Yeah, as in the form of Gautama Buddha, in the form of the traditional Buddha in the center. So on a small throne in front of that, and lower so that you can see the main guy, is your personal teacher in their form, in their own form. Okay, not looking like an Indian from 2,500 years ago. Okay, so really now you have two of your lamas there, maybe more. Shaljel Duki Rinpa Namba Chen, they are in the form that you see them when you meet them from day to day. Okay, however they normally look, then on the throne in front is your own personal teacher. Okay, Chen Sharwa Tabu Kyun Yuna Kyun De Selmida. If they have some physical deformity, you don't have to visualize that. like a bald head or something. Like they should have lots of hair. And then, like you should visualize them the example they give here is a lama who had an eye problem, okay, whose eye was, one eye had, what do you call it, cataract or something. Then you shouldn't visualize your lama with defects, okay? It's bad luck to see any kind of defects in your lama, okay? If you see defects in a lama, then go find another lama who doesn't have defects, okay? But don't sit there and think about your lama's defects. This is a way to have a lousy life, okay? All right. Tabu ken yuna, ken disamida. Chag ye, so physically we shouldn't visualize them that way, but the point is that mentally, we shouldn't concentrate on problems that we see in our lama. Okay? If you have a lama who has problems, maybe find a different lama who doesn't have problems. You see what I mean? But don't dwell on things you see, which are coming from you anyway. Okay? All right. Shell duki na bachana. Chen shabitabikin yuna kendi samitab. Charye cheche. The teacher in front, your teacher, the right hand is in this gesture, okay? This gesture, mudra, is the Dharma teaching gesture. This gesture means teaching the Dharma, okay? Teaching spiritual knowledge. That's the right hand, okay? Yun nyamshak itengdu. Nyamshak means the meditation posture. The left hand is in meditation posture, which is palm up, okay? And again, there's a thungse, a sage's bowl, with nectar in it. So your lama, your personal lama, is sitting like this. The Buddha is sitting like this, right? Behind him. And then your teacher is like this, okay? Like that. Why? This is really beautiful, so it's probably a homework question. How are we doing on time? Okay, yeah, we got 8 minutes. Teni ni samotong ni la nambasha shindu chitin bate sangi ni yin bita. Those of you who are studying Tibetan, do you know Mingde Shaktam? Anybody know Mingde Shaktam? What is that? Mingde only exists in names and signs. Only exists in names and signs. This is the way in the highest teachings that we describe dependent origination. The people around you exist only in names and signs. And the word for sign here is da, and it's very unusual. Okay? Ming de shaksam da. De is the instrumental. Through signs, they exist. What do you mean stuff exists through signs? It means the stuff around you consists of tiny images popping out of karmic seeds in your own mind. Okay? Everything around you. I don't like the heat in this room right now. It's too warm for me. Okay, where's that coming from? Who made it warm in this room? You did, okay? Where's the warmth coming from? It's not coming from the atmosphere of the earth or the sun. It's coming from your own mind. Okay, how? There's a karmic seed ripening in your mind right now. That seed opens, and then an image of warmth comes out of that seed, and you feel warm. Okay, that's called Ming De Shak Tam. It's just mental images, okay? The person sitting next to you is a quarter inch mental image in the back of your head. If you don't like them, you can blame yourself. If you like them, you can... I like them. Good job, you made a lot of nice people. You know? Okay, so those are little tiny images coming out of your mind. Anyway, the word for image, the ancient term, is da, okay? But here the word da, I love it because if you're trying to learn Tibetan, the word da as it's used here, is there's a da for why the lama is like this. So here da means it's a sign of something going on. So da here means that's a sign of something going on. What? He's teaching and at the same time he's in deep meditation on emptiness directly. Okay, the left hand is in meditation gesture. We're not talking about the bowl now. Just the left hand palm up on the lap means he's meditating. And this means that the chest gesture means he's teaching at the same time, which only a Buddha can do. Only a Buddha can be in meditation on emptiness directly and engaging in normal activities at the same time. So that's a da, that's a sign that the person you're visualizing is enlightened and is a Buddha. So it's very beautiful. The fact that your teacher is going like this is like, I'm a Buddha, you see? Okay? It's like that. They're trying to say I'm a Buddha. I'm not personally a Buddha, but that's what the visualization is supposed to be. You're supposed to think, oh, they're trying to give me a da. They're trying to tell me something. Duh, I'm enlightened, okay? All right. I'm teaching and I'm in meditation on emptiness at the same time. Okay, so there's a reason. And you often see Jetsun Kapa, I think, right? He's often in a similar gesture. There's 15 different hand gestures he can be in, but But that's the one. So that's a beautiful. I really like that. I like that explanation. Okay. So we'll stop there. I want to say a few words about the retreat in general. It's a meditation. We'll be doing a lot of meditation. We'll be doing a lot of sitting. That builds up prana. That builds up. Sometimes people jump up and take off their clothes and run around naked. I've seen it, okay? It with my teacher students. But you, today, the first day is okay. You're calm. You just came from wherever, Ohio. And everything's okay. But 3 or 4 days into it, you're going to start to feel like shaky, or to sit for long hours is difficult. You won't sleep as well as you normally sleep because there's other people making noise in your cabin or yelling at midnight outside your cabin window. You don't have your fridge handy. You know, like you can't go and get comfort in the middle of the night, and you got to sneak the stuff into your bunk bed and stuff. Somebody had a Coke under their bed, I thought, didn't they? But you have to... It won't be... It'll get harder, okay? So, two suggestions. Physically, we have... We started a system a couple years ago where we had massage therapists here during the retreat. And no one has run around with their clothes off since then. I think it's a good idea. You know, I kind of resisted it because, I don't know, I thought it was kind of new agey or something, but it works. It's worked very well. So I'd like to introduce the massage therapist, Bob Fromhoff from Flagstaff. Can you stand up? Yeah. Nicole Vigna is going to be, who just got licensed and certified in Arizona. Tahia Knapp, is Tahia here? Yeah. And then I think we'll have one more coming. Am I right? Is there any? Is that it? Yeah. So if you, who's doing the scheduling for them?
Bob actually made a schedule.
For himself or?
He made it for all of them.
I made it for everyone.
Oh, okay.
It works.
Okay, is that good for you? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
We can talk about it.
Well, you guys work it out. But if you feel like, if you've connected with one of those three people, they all got high rate. You got ratings last time. And they were all high. They were all got good ratings. So if you feel shaky or you feel nervous or you think you're going to run around with your clothes off or something, then before that, please talk to one of the massage therapists. And they will give you a nice massage. And I do it once in a while. I'm a little shy to take a massage, but I do do it sometimes. And it does calm you down. And you won't get loom. We call it loom condition, okay? So don't be shy. They charge, but if you don't have money, just talk to... Who's in charge of all that? Give me one person on the staff.
I was told that they wanted people to talk to them personally.
The massage therapist? Well, anyway, if you want a massage and you can't afford one, then just talk to Rebecca then. And then we'll work it out, okay? They keep the money themselves, and I think they deserve it, and it's good. It's proper to offer it to them. But if you need a massage, we can help you. ACI can help you, okay? So nobody should not have one if they don't have money, okay? All right. You talk to them. I don't like to talk about money. Then mentally, if you need some help, or emotionally, if you need some help, or you just have stuff going on in your life anyway, and you want to talk to somebody about it, where's that? I'm going to introduce the teachers who will be teaching Dharma this week, okay? And then I'm going to ask them to stand up one by one. And if you see someone, you know, that you connect with, then feel free to talk to them, even when we're in silence. You can go to them and write a note. If you're having trouble at the retreat, or if you just have stuff going on in your life since 6 years ago and you need to talk to somebody, they're here for you, okay? That's why they're here, all right? So just feel free, approach them and, you know, talk to them about your stuff, because part of this purpose of the retreat is that you have a chance to talk to people who can help you with your personal issues, okay? So I've just asked them to stand up one by one. You can read their bios in the playbill. So I'd like them to stand up and stay standing. Okay, Giselle Anselin from Australia, Bonnie Baptist, who's a long-term student of Lama Sopa and ran a, I met her running a retreat center 20 years ago, and also my student. She has a business background. Giselle has a more of a therapist, all kinds of therapy background. Tad Fettig, who's a longtime Dharma student, yogi, and a pretty well-known filmmaker in the United States. Rosa van Grieken. Where are you, Rosa? She's from L.A. She's a pretty famous clothes designer. Just got hired by Juicy Couture, stolen by Juicy Couture, and a good yoga teacher and a good Dharma teacher. So many years of experience in those fields. So speak Spanish also, right? If you need that. Darcy Jones, a long-term Dharma student and teacher for a long time in Lama Sopa's organization and here also. Started out as a Asian art specialist. Anyway, that's a long story. Amy Lancaster, good yoga teacher. Where are you? Yeah, that's okay. Yoga teachers can also help you. Marjorie Mayer. Yeah, I think you're giving the nutritional stuff. Yeah, so we'll be having some talks about... I think it's... Excuse me if it's too simplified, but basically how to be a vegetarian without killing yourself. And going cuckoo. Anatole Nguyen, long-time Dharma student, very good yoga teacher, very good on issues of food, natural food, raw food, vegan. And he's running a program now to get yoga into high schools, and they've had a successful fundraising thing to get the Flagstaff High School board to accept a yoga. They have a yoga program that they cut it, and they raised the money to put it back in. So they paid the high school district to put it back, and that's cool. So it's been very successful for 2-3 years now in Flagstaff. Venerable Nimbo, where are you? He and Mercedes Balena. Huh? I understand. Oh, you are? Okay, can you stand up? Oh, so Ningbo is one of my personal assistants who travels the world with me and doesn't get any sleep. He's a very good teacher of scripture. He's been working recently on a major commentary by one of Tsongkhapa's students on how to think clearly. So he'll be teaching from that text, which is very, very beautiful. It's one of the greatest books ever written about how to think. And it will take him 20 years to finish it. Seriously. So he's about 2 or 3 years into it. Mercedes Belena is going to teach a... She's also one of my assistants who travels with me. They're partners. She's going to teach a sutra that she's been translating. Very beautiful sutra where... a woman came to Lord Buddha and asked him questions. And she's supposed to be, she's like a wise woman, but she's in disguise. And she comes and asks Lord Buddha these very deep questions, mainly about emptiness. Okay, so it's a very beautiful, rare sutra where a woman is approaching the Buddha in the 2,500 years ago and asking questions about spiritual life. So she's going to be teaching from that sutra, which she's been translating. Johnny O. Should I embarrass you? I don't know. No, he was a Broadway star, and then we stole him. And I think he was in the, was it the Lion King or something like that? So he's a great musician, he's a good yoga teacher. He has some very great classes going on in Phoenix with Nick, a very popular teacher in Phoenix right now, and just a good, nice person. Good Dharma teacher, Venerable Jingme Palmo, where are you? she'll be teaching. She's like my assistant for 100 years now. And last night she was out on a godforsaken trip to some little town east of here. Long time student and has studied with many great lamas, and she can help you a lot. Cecile Lauban, not here yet. She's a yoga teacher from France, and she's also one of Anatole's students, I think, and so she can help you with questions. She also has a dance background, so if you're into dance, she's good. Erin Schott, where is she? Erin is a certified yoga teacher, and she'll be teaching some of the yoga. She's also helping to run the Glendale Center. I think in September she'll be running it by herself. Okay. Aisha Skofalas. Aisha's from Mexico City or Tepoztlan. And she just got back from teaching 300 businessmen in Mexico City. She's doing very successful work in Mexico City teaching teaching Dharma to normal people, not like us. And she's a good yoga teacher. She'll be teaching yoga also, I think. So, okay. And speaks Spanish, obviously, if you need that. Orit Vasig, where are you? She's from Israel. She's an RN. She has a degree in phys ed teaching. She's also a certified yoga teacher. And she and her husband, Scott, have been serving the three-year retreat. They foolishly signed up to take care of the retreats. So she's been the outside medical person. There are three medical people inside the retreat, one MD and two PAs and an RN, but she's the outside RN. She's been taking care of everybody really well. And she's also a good yoga teacher. She kills us from time to time on the tour. She will teach the yoga. So, but also an experienced Dharma teacher if you have any issues that you need help with. Okay. Nicole Vigna, a long time, owned a yoga studio in Pennsylvania a long 100 years ago, just became certified massage therapist in Arizona, and a long-term Dharma student, been through many years of study. So if you want a massage and advice at the same time, she's Rebecca Vinicor. She'll be teaching. And then, I don't know, it's been 15 years or something. She's been staying with me for 15 years. She has a background in, what do you call it, theater, and specifically, what do you call it, the person who hires the actors, casting. She was very successful in New York in casting, and then has come out to Arizona to study, and also to, she's been running all of the retreats. And she's on the board of the ACI Phoenix. So if you need personal advice about anything, check out the people around you. And obviously there are other senior students here, Venerable Phil and people like that. So if you have personal issues, Fran Diane can help. Lots of other people. Then talk to them during the week and don't be shy, okay? Because while you're here, you might as well work out the other problems in your life also. Okay, right? That's partly why we're here. Okay, please sit down. I'm done if you have anything. I'm over, as usual. Huh? You want to take a shot? Okay. Satsang with Mooji.